Hello, rap fans. It's Richard Herring here. Thank you for listening to my podcasts, powered by Acast Plus. Do tell your friends if you think they might enjoy them too. And do come and see me on tour in my show, Can I Have My Ball Back? Go to richardherring.com/ballback/tour for all tour dates, going to lots of places in the UK. Some extra gigs added in London at the Leicester Square Theatre and the Bloomsbury Theatre. The Leicester Square Theatre first gig is very nearly sold out, so do rush along to those shows, London, if you want to come along. Some of the shows selling fantastically well, some of them selling pretty badly. Hello, Swindon. Do you know I'm coming to your town? Please buy some tickets. And I do have to give a trigger warning. I've done the show only a few times and 6 men have passed out. After the bit where I explain what happens to you during an operation for testicular cancer. So, are you man enough to handle my balls? Only come if you are, have lots of balls and are not scared of balls. There is some mild testicle trauma involved in this story of testicular cancer. It's mainly funny, though, and if you don't come, that means you're scared to come, and I'm going to judge you, so... It's like going on a fairground ride, so do come along. It's going to be very exciting to see if you make it through. I'll give you a badge if you make it through unscathed. Anyway, come and see the tour, richardherring.com for all that news. Some great Rahalastapas coming up, I have to tell you, in the next few weeks. The tour was a lot of fun. Thanks very much to everyone who came. Sit back, relax, and enjoy my stupid fucking podcast.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hello, welcome to another special Rahalastapa from the Bristol Slapstick Festival. This is very special. This is with the goodies. I was very excited to do this one. We were meant to video as well, but the video went wrong. So this is the only way to enjoy this. And you'll have to find the clips yourself somewhere down the line. Hey, look, I'm doing loads of these podcasts out on the road, as well as some in London for the rest of 2019 and 2020 and so on. So go to richchang.com/gigs and you can see the ones that have been announced so far. There's loads more to be announced in about a week's time as I record this. Go to rahalastapa.co.uk to find out more about this podcast and become a badger and get access to some secret stuff. All right, I hope you enjoy this lovely show with the lovely goodies and a very happy little fanboy called Richard Herring. Bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome your host for this afternoon, Richard Herring.
Hello. Thank you. Thank you very much. Hello, Bristol. Love to see you on this afternoon. This is the beautiful Old Vic Theatre, welcome. Very exciting for me, I'm sure for you too, to be chatting to the guys we've got coming up, personal heroes of mine. I think anyone of my age will know this was sort of the background of our childhood. If you're my age and we're into the goodies, we were very much the in-betweenies. too young for Monty Python, too old for Mary Mungo and Midge, and... We got, only the goodies and maybe Tiz was as well, a little bit. They opened this possibility of anarchic, gently transgressive comedy, which is sort of more impressive, really, than that you can put this stuff out at any time of day. It certainly was an influence on the work I did with Stuart Lee, and we similarly did an afternoon show that was much too rude for children, but somehow got away with it by being on in the afternoon. And it is a group of people who... have influenced comedy I mean, it's incredible. It's almost five decades since they started. I think there was certainly an influence on the young ones. I know there were definitely an influence on the Mighty Boosh, and certainly an influence on us as well. Let's meet the men themselves. They're probably best known for being the man who walks to the phone in Whoops Apocalypse, Robin from Roland Rat, and the host of the Saturday Banana. You know them best as that, but they also, I don't know if you know this, did a little show together. They are Timbrook Taylor, Graham Garden, and Bill Oddie, all the surviving goodies, ladies and gentlemen. Here they are. Wherever you're going to go.
I like this.
Graham in the middle.
What? Graham in the middle. I'm in the middle.
Oh, you're saying that. Right?
Who's in the middle?
I don't know.
I'm in the middle. Oh, I'm not in the middle.
You're sitting the other end.
Yeah. It's the bloody goodies. They've all survived.
Thank you. Thank you.
Amazingly. not one of them dead. They're all alive. It's
incredible. That's nice. That's a nice start.
You're not looking too well yourself anyway.
We don't want a bad ending, do we now?
So, what's it like to 50 years on practically since you started to still be selling out a theatre, getting that reception, still being so fondly remembered?
It's exhausting. but we're grateful.
Yeah.
Very grateful.
Very nice. Yeah. Very nice.
It is lovely, and one of the nicest things is actually with respect to this audience gathered here for the same purpose, I assume, when you're just out anywhere, you know, being sort of out on some deserted island somewhere, and somebody come up and they go, oh, God, I'm trespassing, and they'll come out and say, well, you say, well, I'll watch you on the goodies years ago. And they always say, I grew up with you.
Yes.
They always use that phrase, and no, you bloody didn't.
What I find is they're old people and they say, I used to be allowed to stay up to watch you. Oh, please.
And then some of them say, I used to write with you, and that's Graham.
Oh, they haven't lost it. So it's good.
Never had it.
I mean, I suppose it's 40 years practically since you stopped being the goodies, really, or since you stopped doing this show. I mean, you have worked together in different pairings. And,
yeah.
Banana Man.
Yeah. Oh, please. You are digging them up today, aren't you? That was a show of shame, the way I look at it.
I love it. No, it's awesome.
No. You don't love it. You don't love it.
I have to say, I totally disagree, as usual, with Bill.
Banana. It's good.
Yeah.
I actually refused. I mean, we shouldn't mention that. If you don't know what Banana Man was, it was a. Oh, no, it's a different one. I'm thinking of a banana show or something. I was on as well, a children's
Saturday,
one.
Saturday Banana.
What's all this about bananas?
It's you doing it, don't blame me.
I remember a bunch of students, much, much later on, rushing down in the morning. I was staying at the house and I said, we've got to go out. And they said, no, hang a minute, Banana Man's on. And about 12 university students with degrees and intelligence, and they were all watching Banana Man.
Quite right, too.
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely. It was on the syllabus.
It was.
Writing course.
Should have been.
Not to write.
So let's briefly talk about how it all came together and what drew the three of you together. You obviously were at Cambridge together, and a couple of you were the present in the footlights.
Yes.
Not everybody.
Not everyone.
No.
Who got their OBE first, though, Bill?
Exactly. And
yeah, but that was for abusing animals.
And to prove it.
The bird watching, basically. Yeah.
There it is. Yes, I bet Chris Beckham isn't showing his off.
Do you wear yours, guys? Do you wear your OBEs or do you have them?
No.
We wave them, but not our OBEs. No.
So what drew... You worked in the 60s on a variety of different shows, again, in different pairings, and you obviously knew each other at university. What was it that made the three of you decide that you wanted to do a TV show together?
Because everyone else had gone off to do Python.
Whatever happened to them? That's the question. Actually, what it was Graham and I were doing a series together. We did the second series, Broaden Your Mind, about an excuse to do comedy about everything. And the BBC said, we'd like another series, but could it be slightly different? Meaning, could it be a hell of a sight better? And Bill was doing a lot of the shows, appearing in various rooms, singing a song each time. And so the three of us got together, and let's do something a bit different with a storyline.
Yeah.
And that was, it was a way of putting lots of different sketches together with one storyline. And you didn't have to set up the characters each week. To start with, it was quite tricky, but once the audience knew who you were and how you would react, it's a bit like, you know, Don't Tell Him Pike or whatever it is, you know, that you know what they're going to say.
Sure.
Stupid boy.
Yeah. That's Dad's Army, you know, that's not the goodie. So it's that...
Same. Clever clock.
It's very lucid, wasn't it, Graham?
It was a good time at the BBC, and I know you've had troubles with the BBC in some ways, which is part of the reason this DVD has taken a while to come out. But you were given a show on a basic format, and they just trusted you to get on with it.
Yeah, we went to see Michael Mills, who was head of comedy, and said, you know, rather than do another sketch show, because there's lots of those about at the moment, we want to do this using sketch-type comedy in a half-hour story. And it's three blokes who'll do anything, anywhere, anytime. And he said, well, I get that idea on my desk every week, along with the German version of Dad's Army.
I'd love to see that.
But he said, I think you can probably get away with it, so have a series. We didn't even do a pilot. I mean, those were the days when there were people who actually backed their judgment at the BBC and commissioned shows that they weren't sure
they
about
trusted
it. Bill Cotton was very good too.
Yeah. That was the touching thing. I don't know whether it still happens, but you know, you're sometimes aware that you have a bit of a pull with certain bosses who can get you on, don't you? But people do, you know. What did you do for them? Yes, but anyway. But in those ancient days, in the 60s and 70s, by and large, you didn't have to go through that process, you know, of being judged all the time. And I remember this guy's words to us after that meeting was, I assume you'll do something different with it. I think he said, you know, we get this idea all the time, but I assume you'll do something different with it. And that was trust, because he had no way of knowing it. And we let him down.
It doesn't really happen anymore. It doesn't happen. I think Python was the same. They basically went, here's your money, go off and make the show. Yeah. And that doesn't happen now. And now producers sort of want to be involved in everything.
But that was just a sort of junior version of At Last in 1948.
Yeah.
So that's a big dumb thing, silly. But it was. Four Yorkshiremen, here we go again.
and the DVD's out, which is an incredible opportunity to catch up on all this, all the BBC shows.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. So there's how many discs in the DVD? It's
bloody 10 discs.
70 odd shows.
I haven't watched them all. I had a look at some of them. But it's amazing how it does pervade your childhood memories. I can watch shows now and a week later have forgotten what they are. But I watched Goodies and the Beanstalk the other day, and I can't have watched it many times as a child, because I think it was on twice, maybe, on the TV, that one. And I remembered so many distinct things about it from when I was 8 years old. So it's incredible to create those kind of iconic scenes that people still remember.
I like this.
Yep.
I feel that, in a way, one of our skills, if you like, or was it luck, I don't know, was creating icons. I mean, there's a series about icons on now, isn't there?
Yep.
Yes, yeah, all right. I know what's going on out there. And we ought to be on. We ought to be on it, because I think that's something that was very crucial to our appeal, or people remembering us, you know, because you only had to put that flipping bike, didn't you? People prefer the bike, they like better than the shows, definitely. The bike was like that. I guess the kitten up the post office tower. There's several of them. Oh, they say, you can get a round of applause.
We have a special guest actually coming on. It is the. If we had the budget you had for those shows, I'd get a massive skeleton of a cat to come on now. So it's.
What a shame. I'd have helped with the budget for that.
But it's lovely to watch those shows again, and they do stand up. I mean, in nearly every regard. There's obviously some things that wouldn't be shown on TV now for political correct reasons. Yes.
Health and safety.
But not very much. But actually, that first episode, it feels very modern. I love the way they're packed with gags. There's just overloaded with gags almost. But also that opening scene where you're opening the doors and it's the chroma key, whatever, to show the photos. It must have seemed incredible at the time, but it still seems like a modern show.
Well, I don't know how things are done these days. Obviously, I haven't been out in the great world of television, radio or entertainment of any kind for a long time. But in those days, we were quite methodical. And as Tim has already said, we'd have those lists, you know, of ideas. And when it came to writing it, usually Graham would take a chunk, I'd take a chunk, we swapped it over. But if you were doing a visual sequence, I'm sure you did the same thing. You sort of write a list down, and when you got to about 15, you thought, I've got a sequence here. But it was quite a methodical process.
Yeah.
Well, we'll talk about that a bit more later, because I didn't want to talk about the writing. I think, again, one of the things I remember is you as a pop group, which, again, we will talk about later as well. But I've got a very clear memory of, you know, Funky Gibbon was one of the first songs that really, really pervaded my consciousness. And I remember being sort of slightly excited and terrified of Graham going, Funky Gibbon, with that big hand.
You were frightened.
Out of nowhere. That stuck in my memory for some reason. It sort of haunts my childhood. Hopefully in a
dream.
Hopefully good. So I think we may have a clip.
Oh, no.
A Gibbon-based clip.
We haven't seen these clips, so they're going to be a bit of a surprise.
Let's have a look. Dogs always howling, cats always yelling, but gibbons only like to sing and dance. Try that monkey, get a little funky, and in the wild start to smile. Gibbon, half a chance, do the funky gibbon. We are here to show you how. Do the funky gibbon. Slap him up and down upon the floor. Tickle his feet and hear him giggle. Then dip him down the middle. Give that gibbon what he's hollering for. Oh, stuff that gibbon, no. Stuff that gibbon, no. Stuff that gibbon now. Hey, nanny, no. Oh, stuff that gibbon, no. Stuff that gibbon, no. Stuff that gibbon now. Promenade gibbon round the hall. Well, come down like a rubber ball. Drop him on the floor, trample on his toes. Swing him out the tail from the chandelier. Pass him down, ringing his ears. All he needs is to hurry up his nose. Oh, stuff that gibbon. Oh, stuff that gibbon. Oh, stuff that gibbon now. What for is a myth? Oh, stuff that gibbon. Oh, stuff that gibbon. Oh, stuff that gibbon now. It's mainly gibbon and banana based hot comedy that you're into.
Happening there? Can I just happening?
What was that about?
And you escaped, Graham, as a gibbon?
No, I've been cursed by the witch, I think.
You'd been possessed by the spirit of a gibbon.
I shall become a gibbon. It was like, yeah, oh, I see, okay.
Yeah.
I don't remember.
We were rocking that dungaree style, weren't we?
Yeah.
You looked as if you were enjoying it so much, Graham.
Yeah. What I liked was the way the director very carefully got the shot of me putting the glove on.
On Top of the Pops, it was definitely a sort of surprise. And they managed, I can remember, I did rewatch the... And it seemed like a scarier glove than that. It's certainly in my memory. That looks quite fluffy and nice. So... I remember there being a big scary ring on it. That's what I... But I must be wrong. It's interesting that it being three of you, I guess. I mean, there's plenty of examples of three stooges, of three people working together in a team.
The great thing about that is you've got a majority always.
Yes, that's true.
And it is, that worked quite often.
Yeah. But so how did you Did the characters of the goodies come about organically? I mean, watching the early ones, it seems to be developing, or had you sort of worked out this kind of...
Well, we had to know to a point, I think.
We were going to represent all political parties, yeah. Basically.
Yeah. Tim will contradict me here, of course, because you're...
Shall I do it before
and
you
he's
say
right. I say, we've got to have a boffin, we've got to have a scruffy little bastard, and we've got to have a gentleman, a posh bloke. And obviously Tim plays the posh bloke, and you didn't like that, did you? No.
What?
Listen to
what
me
did
when
the oik say? Do you know?
It was oik speak. I right, make it out myself.
But it was basically with a stupid name like Brooke Taylor, you're going to be the posh one, the upper class twit who was a real coward. You've got Graham, who is a doctor and a boffin, really, in real life. And Bill, well, don't let's talk about it.
I never have found out what I.
I mean, it was, you're right, for the democracy of the three of you. You know, with the double act when it's just two of you, and I have some experience of this. It's, you know, you are fighting, but also if there's someone you can gang up, I guess, on one person, if there's three of you, if two of you agree and one of you doesn't. So is that... Was it a problem, the three personalities working together? I know that you two wrote most of it and Tim's...
Well, no, I mean, because the personalities are different, that makes it easier to write. Then you can put the conflict in. And like that clip you saw, the two of them ganging up against me...
Yeah.
Possessed by a gibbon.
That became more and more a structure, as it were, because we started off, certainly for the first series, or maybe we started doing the second series. Anyway, a couple of series early on, we always had a guest villain, you know, or sometimes a guest non-villain, friend or famous person. But we always ended up with the three of us standing there admiring the fine comedy performance of this guest, you know. And we eventually axed the guest and said, we can do that. And one of us will take it into, we'll go mad each week. That was the phrase, you know. Whose turn is it to go mad this week? Usually Graham's.
We all went mad, but you're right, quite right. We were so jealous of the guest stars having all the best parts.
Yeah.
It's usually Doctor Who's and people like that. So yeah. It was suddenly we were able to be the nasty ones. And then you showed a clip there where all of us were nasty ones.
Yes. It's just fun to see. And looking back on it, which again, I wouldn't have struck me as a child, but the budgets were pretty big, I think, weren't they, for the time? And certainly Goodies and the Beanstalk, that must have cost a lot of money to make.
The budgets were quite big, but it was a very economical show in that we planned everything meticulously.
Right.
So we'd have huge meetings before a series where every department would sit around the table, go through the script line by line and see who's going to be responsible for the big hat.
And we used to put... prices on the jokes, didn't we?
Occasionally, yeah, but at the meeting they would say, well, that's a £1,000 joke. You can have four £250 jokes.
That's absolutely
true. It
really
was like that, too. Yeah. But it was great because BBC then was in, a lot of it was in a house. Yeah. So you knew the guys very well and they would sit around the table and if come up with a visual effect, quite often they'd make it better the way they did it, just as a challenge, really.
But you were, because I was going to ask, I think I read about this anyway, but you knew that things could be done when you wrote, so you didn't just write and say, make this happen, these eggs falling.
We always knew a way to make the gag work.
Yeah.
It was a principle, really, wasn't it? And we promised the table, that everybody there, that we wouldn't put anything in the script that we couldn't explain ourselves, if you see what I mean.
How to do it, I mean.
Yeah. There were plenty of things in the script we couldn't explain ourselves. But...
And you've just seen the first episode where you get on the bike and fall off the bike onto concrete. Mm. You were doing big stunts that looked quite dangerous.
People say you must have loved that, Trandum. We hated it.
Right.
Especially the first one, which didn't have a brake or a free wheel.
Right.
So it was Bill going around on the back because he wasn't pedalling. It was horrendous.
And right.
He was just baggage in the first series. But I mean, that shot of us first getting onto the Trandum, the script says they get on the Trandum and ride off.
Right.
And we couldn't. So. Right. So we fell off instead. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it looks quite painful. I mean, you did hurt yourselves.
It was very painful.
Agonizing.
Yes.
Was there any ever serious injuries?
I don't know whether it was from the bike. I know the thing was that I had a great responsibility here because, as I said, I was at the back and they were at the front. They couldn't. I could actually make the pedals whip round, if I remember rightly. Or was it you making them whip round?
Well, anybody
they wouldn't
could.
Whip round.
If one person did them, the other pedals would move.
Yes.
And would gash you across the leg. That was very nasty. But I think most of our accidents were not on the bike.
No. Tim had a nasty one on the bike.
Yeah.
Well, that's another thing. What I was going to say was Graham was, we called him Mr. Wise because he used to put little padding on his elbows. And there was one point when he got padding all over his back and everything, he leapt up in the air and landed on his front. And we were.
We've always said that we did all our own stunts. We had stuntmen on the show who did stunts as other characters and were also very useful to give us advice
yes.
on how to do things. And I found something out the other day, that Lisa Manikovsky in Rhode Island sent me something.
Rhode Island?
Yeah, because Bill, in one of the episodes called Snooze, he is seen sleepwalking on the top of a bus.
Yes.
Very dangerous.
Yes, all right.
And in fact, in that sequence, a stuntman was used to represent Bill in some of the shots.
Some of the shots, yeah.
Yeah, and his name was Mick Dillon. And Lisa sent me his obituary, not because he fell off the bus. But you're in good company, because Mick Dillon is the only stuntman who also stood in for Buster Keaton.
Wow.
Wow!
So there you are.
This is your life, Bill Oddie.
Oh, my God, he's got a list here, hasn't he? We better handle it. Ringo Starr.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I will quickly mention, before we all go to a clip with the stunts in a second, but you did, of course, kill a man with your comedy.
Yes.
Yes.
He died laughing.
Yeah.
He died. And the awful thing was, his wife had told the vicar, and that's how it came in the press. And then suddenly all the press were saying, how do you feel about killing this guy? And I sort of came up with an answer, well, if I'm going to die watching Morecambe and Wise laughing, I don't mind that.
Yeah.
But it was tricky.
But you also...
He was Scottish.
You also put a woman...
So it wasn't that.
We didn't have any...
You also put a woman into labour as well, so... On balance...
Well, we were about
that was a personal thing.
Then she had twins, so we had to do it again.
Now, we met her in Australia.
Yes.
She said she'd been in labour and she wouldn't leave the house when the ambulance arrived.
I mean, that's a pretty good review, isn't it? It's a pretty review. You come, no, I want to see how this turns out.
Yeah. And she turned up with her baby.
Alive. Yeah.
Well, let's have a look at some clips with incredible stunts. This one is from Way Outward Bounds, and you're attempting to escape from a baby army. Have a look at that.
As you do.
A baby army.
A baby
Get
army.
Your inflections right.
An army of babies.
Baby army. Exactly.
Mobilise all units immediately. Pursue and exterminate. Repeat, exterminate.
Here come the leaders of tomorrow. There go the losers of today. Run, 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 run. There's the way. No use pretending that we've got a choice. Young is sponge and young is the lamb.
They must be all middle-aged now.
I haven't seen that since the time. I think it went on a bit.
It's bloody creepy, isn't it, Bill? It really is weird.
Well, like, you often compare to cartoons, but I think a lot of your stuff feels like someone's really bad dream, you know, like it's where you're sort of trapped inside someone's crazy dream.
Well, I think that was based on, am I right, you correct me, was that the idea that everybody thought Churchill looked like a baby.
Yeah,
I think that was the tenuous link.
Yeah,
but how we then got to that.
You packed so much into that, and again, those effects, special effects, still look impressive. The planes flying over and bombing you still. Look...
It makes me. That's made me feel quite uncomfortable. It really.
It wasn't true, Bill. It's okay.
They weren't real babies.
No.
That was, I think. Let's see what I can remember. I think that was on Jersey, wasn't it?
Very likely,
sure?
Yeah.
Yeah?
I remember there was a Grips called Tex.
Yes.
Who devised a scheme for putting the camera onto a wire so that you got those shots of the plane's point of view.
Yeah.
They look good, though.
And
really
so it was all lashed together at the last minute and a new effect was born.
Did you ever feel, this is speaking from my personal experience, kind of embarrassed that you were making people do a proper job of putting all this crazy stuff together? Because that's how I felt with the sketches we wrote. You'd write something and then some man had to go, oh, I've got to make this happen.
What was quite interesting, the guy that did the scenic designer, at the end of every run, he was so knackered. He I'm sorry, I'm never going to do it again. And he was always the first to queue to do the next series.
Right.
So he missed it, yes.
Who was?
The designer.
Oh, the design. Sorry, yeah.
not Buster Keaton's. No.
You have been an influence on the next, well, many generations of comedians now. How does that feel? Do you see it yourself within? I mean, I've never heard the young ones talk about Ben Elton talk about the goodies. He may have done, but it seems like the young ones had a lot of similarities talking animals.
Well, you know, I think that's. I mean, I throughout life, well, looks at other people's shows. Could be yours, and sort of thing. Which shows do you feel pleased that you were linked in with? And I must admit, as soon as I saw the young ones, I always thought, you know, it's not like it's stolen from us or anything like that. But I'm really pleased that the same sort of humour and the same lack of values, I think, basically, you know, bound us together. Yeah. And then there's a few other shows like that. Yeah,
Mighty Bush was good.
Well, we were always quite glib about it, but whenever anyone, as they always ask comedians and writers, and I won't ask you, where do you get your crazy ideas from?
Oh, God.
We would say we copy them off the goodies.
Yeah, that's
right. That's a good way out. That, please. Yes, sir.
You still owe us for that.
We do. I think you still owe us, actually. I think we ended up in debt in the end. Is it flattering to see the Mighty Boosh of again?
I do watch all this thing. I've had a bit of trouble with the Mighty Boosh. It's never quite struck me, you know. I always felt that hippie sort of person used to be very good at cooking cake, so that's what he'd be best at.
Yeah.
But apparently he's doing that now. No, Number Nine Worst Invasive, what's the full title?
The
League of Gentlemen. Those are the ones that I really still love, I must admit. And that's the stuff.
But it's interesting because I think, you know, often your stuff's very visual and it's incredibly clever, though. And I think often critics overlook the cleverness when comedy's daft and full of fun.
Funny enough,
often overlook as a valuable.
Funny enough, one or two of the shows that I like most were at the end of a series. We'd run out of money; it all had to be in a room.
Yeah.
So there was no film, so it was all chat. And they're actually some of my favourite episodes.
Well, you do both fantastically well. I mean, the one I really remember is from childhood was you all locked in the bunker, and that was obviously like a bottle episode where you were. Yeah. Where it was all about the characters. And that one completely stuck with me.
Well, it allowed us, it shows what highfalutin ideas we had, but it allowed us to act, you know, because most of the time we're sort of human props, weren't we? We were being sort of rushed around and hit and flattened, like the cartoon thing.
Yeah.
You know, a cartoon animal can be mowed down by a steamroller or something, and then somebody comes on with a pump and blows him up and he's off again, you know. And indeed we did do that, but in these ones where there were just us in the studio, it was great. We had to, by and large, had to do it ourselves, and that was good fun.
And, you know, I think the transgression, both within the ideas, there was some, underneath it all, there was some transgressive ideas, but you also messed around with the format of television. I think you put artificial advertising breaks into the certainly first few series, which was something I had done, I'm not sure anyone had done before, but...
you feel they must have done, but...
But it sort of seems transgressive. Just even see that on the BBC, it's just like, oh, that's a funny idea to
put adverts
in.
People had done spoof adverts,
of course,
but they hadn't put a break in the actual programme to say... End of part one.
Yeah,
which is
they're
what
just
we
sketches,
did.
Basically.
Yeah.
And you know, I think it seems to me the comedy that endures most, that people love the most, and how many shows from 40 years ago would get a full audience coming on a Saturday afternoon in Bristol to come and see you? I don't think it's that many, but
very intelligent people.
They are. Yeah. They are. These are very.
I think we can all agree on that.
Bristol are a great crowd, I have to say. But you know, I think the critics maybe were more dismissive of you than you deserved. Maybe at the time, as you were popular.
They were all right at the time. It was only afterwards they sort of were coloured in a different way. Yeah. You know, it was all Python and that sort of thing.
They never saw it again.
No, that's true.
But when you watch
Python... They can do now because they've got this wonderful DVD set.
Yeah. That's true, yeah. But when you watch Python, you know, Python's now all on Netflix, so you can, if you have the guts to do it, you can watch the whole of Monty Python, which I don't think is as enjoyable to watch as the goodies, because like the hits are maybe are big, but there's a lot of misses in
Life of Brian was wonderful. The rest of it doesn't stand up quite so well.
Well, that's true. Well, quickly, you nearly did a film that as the goodies. Is that true?
I don't know how nearly we did it.
We wrote the script.
We got a call from Steven Spielberg. Yeah. This is amongst, and we always got a phone call at the end of the recording, and it was either, who's died now? Who is it? Another woman died. No, it isn't. No, apparently it's Amanda. It's Steven Spielberg on the phone, and we just, oh, don't be ridiculous. And did anybody take the call? One of the BBC.
Somebody must have done.
That's probably why you didn't get the film if you didn't take the call.
Yeah, bugger off, Steven. We don't like you. Yes.
He'd watched it late at night in Los Angeles.
Right.
Said to his secretary, see if they're interested in making a film.
And sobered up in the morning.
Although we didn't make it, it felt like an Oscar, the fact that Steven Spielberg thought of us. And actually, somebody else tried to take us over there to do an American version of it.
Really,
We realised that you had to sign up for 7 years and you could be out in 3 months.
Yeah.
I'm almost glad we never did, you know, because many TV comedy teams have tried to do films, and some of them are okay, certainly. We've got some, is it tonight or tomorrow? You've got the In Between Us,
I think.
Yeah, you know, it's a very entertaining bunch. But you want to lose it to nothing, really, especially if you've done a TV show, which obviously was very lavish and would have been expensive. And of course, it wouldn't be done in the way it would have been done then, because now it'd all be digitalised and so on and so forth. Yeah, press a button, goodies button, boom, there it is. Yeah.
Well, it's interesting because, I mean, they are lavish for TV shows, but part of the charm of it is that the babies clearly aren't babies. You know, I think if they were really babies, that would be a lot weirder than the Mean Girls.
When we went to ITV, it cost almost three times as much because they didn't have the in-house people working together. So you wasted a lot of money.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's have a... I want to talk about your influences.
Yeah, we haven't seen a lot of these, actually, so it's really nice to see them.
Yeah,
we want to thank you for that.
Well, that's all right. It's my pleasure. It's been lots of fun watching them back. Do buy the DVDs, I have to say. It's absolutely...
Oh, yes.
You don't have to say.
No, I do have to say it. Absolutely. Don't watch them all in one go. And spread them out a bit.
Over 3 years.
You can watch one a day. It's got a lot of fun.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promote for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times.
Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
So let's talk about what influenced the Goodies. We talked about who were influenced by you, but we're going to see some clips after this of some of the stuff that may be influenced by Keaton and things like that. Was it the old films and the old cartoons, or which stuff sort of turned you on to?
I think probably we saw more cartoons than the old slapstick films.
Sure.
We did. I might obviously love Keaton and did some of his jokes, indeed. but I think we were sort of brought up in Bugs Bunny and Tom and Jerry and things like that.
Yeah.
It was that kind of humour where, you know, there's a thing there where people get shot and then they get up and they're doing something else in a minute.
Yes, yeah.
So I think that was it. And also things, you know, when you're a kid, things like the Beano, that sort of silly humour.
Yeah, but there's the news... theatres you went to, they showed the silent films and cartoons. I remember my mother used to drop me off and she went shopping in Manchester. Little did she know that a gentleman would put a hand on the knee and I had to move each time, but I wasn't going to tell her because things like Bugs Bunny were wonderful.
Yeah. Worth being abused by, I don't know.
That gentleman is here today.
There are 20 of them.
Moving around, you can probably hear by the yelps it's going on. Can you imagine that in the middle of... I'm sorry, I can't get over that. Engelbert Humperdinck show. And that after that piece of nonsense, it cuts to him singing whatever he's... I can't even remember. Anybody remember Engelbert hit? Can you know?
He did the Eurovision Song Contest a couple of years ago, like 3 or 4 years ago.
Anyway.
He's still going. He's still there.
Yeah, yeah. But it was very bold of somebody to have a go.
He never invited us out to Vegas, did he?
No, I bet he did.
How did it go down in Germany? Did the Germans like you?
Yes.
You won the Silver Rose of Montreux. There's a joke.
We did,
you
the German guy there said we would like to show it, but it's a bit too clever for us. So thank you very much.
Yeah. So it's
only he did it with a German accent, obviously.
Okay. Yeah. But that human cartoon. Had anyone really done anything like that before you to sort of try and do cartoons as people? Because obviously the fun of cartoons.
One of the bits we always liked was when we just copied Keaton. With the building coming down on top of us, which was terrifying. We didn't do it as well as him because you see how nervous we were. But Keaton coming up as a character and taking a note of it, you can when you play it to the audience, about 5% know, but at least we're saying, thank you, Buster.
Yeah. It's interesting because there's little... I mean, as you watch it now, it's quite a topical show. There's a lot of topical satire. And so some of the shows... kind of wouldn't make sense to people who don't remember, or some of the jokes wouldn't make sense, but there's quite a lot of topical stuff, but most of it does...
I think they do. I mean, if something was in the news in any kind of profile, then I think people remember these things, you know, so... Oh,
This was the 70s. Now, the worst moment recently was in Bristol. And I was with Jack D and his daughter, and his daughter's at Bristol University. She's studying history. I said, what period? She said, the 70s.
So you've been watching history.
It's a very interesting historical document, I have to say. Well, we'll look at this clip as we've talked about influences from Keaton. This is a clip from Clown Virus. You're trying to dispose of a huge can of soup in this one. Let's see.
I can't remember.
There's Keaton references in this one, so let's have a look, see what we're talking about, Keaton.
Just like a boomerang, I try to hold you. How many times have I shot you down? My love.
Lovely. Lovely.
I'm sorry, I didn't think that was at all funny. There was something missing. Or somebody was missing.
Yeah. Even halfway through that, when the razor sound came in like a touch too late, you went, oh, I'll get your cues right. still, I think that's the second episode. I think that's pretty early.
It was. Yeah. I tell you, one of the interesting things, certainly I am a bit obsessive when I'm saying these things, is first of all, some of the music, I don't remember the tunes at all. But on the other hand, it's a hell of a contrast between the sort of pianos we've been getting here, isn't it? You know, which is great music being added, but when you see that, you've got a heavy metal band thing, you know, thumping away. And the other is the locations. I think that first one on the beach and the cliffs, I was thinking, wait a minute, that's Portland, yep. In a quarry in Portland, and then the sand was probably Weymouth. Yeah. I love spotting them. Yeah. And I often found very good birds whilst filming.
There was one occasion when you came up and said, there'll be a lot of people here today because I've just spotted a bird from America that shouldn't have been there. And sure enough, all the statistics came. Yeah. So he was right. For once, he was.
Yeah. and of course, the first clip was more of showing the influence of the cartoons, yes. Roadrunner,
yes.
Obviously,
yes,
heavy influence.
Oh, yeah.
And the Keaton and Snub Pollard references in the second script, according to the Slapstick Festival, that's what they... That's
what really is
that? That they did similar things in Gift and Electric House. So.
Ah, right.
That's what you were influenced by, guys, when you wrote that.
Which is well to know. Snub Pollard did all that in the Electric House. Yeah.
I don't even know who Snub Pollard is, I'm sorry. Sue Pollard.
Sue Pollard.
Well, let's talk about the music, because it is a big part of both the programme.
No, they don't want to do that. They're going to go... Nah, 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 nah.
But that was... Seeing you weren't in that clip, let's let you have a little chat about the music. The incidental music, it's all the way through the shows.
Oh, God, yes. It's something I'd always wanted to do, was to break the apparently immovable grip that incidental music had on comedy shows for years and years and years, which generally gave a lot of work to piccolo players and tuba players, because, you know, whenever you can tell us a comedy show, but you go like that, you know, wah, 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 when you go in a flashback, and like that. And I thought, we're not going to do that. And I can't pretend I wasn't inspired at least by the idea of the Monkees, which did that, but then it was a very different thing. They were actually selling the records, that was what it was all about. And frankly, I had great fun working my way through just about every single style, you know, from Latin to rock to sambas and God knows like that. I took it terribly seriously. It's perfectly obvious.
But it's a very important part of it. And obviously then it did make you a sort of like the Monkees, in that you were doing this pop career and you had several...
We had about four or five top 10 records. Yeah. It seemed bizarre, but the great fun of that was we would go on Top of the Pops frequently, and they had a weird rule in those days at the BBC that you would only get on the show if your record was going up the charts. Yeah. And these charts wouldn't come out till, I think it was Thursday, something like that, the day before the bloody show. And, you know, they're looking at it, oh, no, our record's gone down. You know, it's a Bay City record. Oh, no, the record's going to be, we won't be on, you know. But we, time and time again, were on shows with people who were almost in tears because they just heard that their record had gone down.
Right.
And they were axed at the last minute. You know? Mm. And we were just not taking it seriously. He's still awake.
Did you hang out with the pop stars backstage?
No, we hung out with fans people.
And that's actually true.
That is actually true. Yeah. Yeah. They were lovely bunch of people. They really were. And Flick Colby, who was there... choreographer, was great fun. I was very fond of Flick, and she what people, in case they ever wondered, you're watching a panel of people and thinking, what the hell are they wearing? That's so embarrassing, you know. I don't mean it's skimpy, it's just wearing. They come on doing a dance dress up as bananas or something like that, you know. And Flick was doing that on purpose. Right. People at home say it's absolutely ridiculous, and saying, "I really got I'm stupid this week." She was American, by the way.
And we saw Tony Blackburn, or we alluded to Tony Blackburn, which was a sort of running joke of yours, trying to.
He's been quite a good sport about it.
He has. Well, he was at the Leicester Square Theatre, wasn't he?
I've been quite nice about him. Unfortunately, he then asked the next question.
Yeah, so he stood up.
I didn't know he was there. Yeah,
it was. Yeah, so and actually, the first episode I noticed features both Rolf Harris and Jimmy Savile. So there we go. It was hard to escape it, though, wasn't it?
Okay. Surprised that wasn't brought up in court.
Look, we got a little medley of,
medley?
Of musical hits to enjoy. We've already seen you on Shang-a-Lang. That was the good. He's doing Funky Gibbon on Shang-a-Lang, which is great. and now we're going to see. Well, let's show them and then see if you remember them. See if you remember these hits.
Song that we sung when we sang la 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 la. Now it's the same, so let's sing them again. Why shouldn't I be a star? But nobody wants us today. Just because we're made of. What this is, she gave me 6 wet kisses until by nanny we were told it's only nappy love. Oh, that just like a city pen on nappy love does what holds our emotions in. I need you and I want you with all my.
My nappy love.
I need you and I want you. With all my nappy love. Oh, yeah.
This is going to be totally, utterly, completely and ashamedly honest, but I rather thought they were good. I really like those songs. And Timmy Graham was with us when we happened to be in the studio with Alice Cooper. He liked Nappy Love. We played. Not Nappy Love. No, it was Shaky Bum. Yes, Black Pudding Perth. We played that, and that's a real good track, man. Yeah. All right.
I think the Inbetweenies is genuinely like a fantastic song.
Well, that was the first hit we heard, actually.
That was because of the B-side, partly.
Sorry?
It was partly because of the B-side, Father Christmas, Do Not Tell.
Yes, which, strangely enough, they wouldn't release.
What was the song?
Father Christmas, Do Not Touch Me. It's like...
Which would have been a big hit in the club.
And it ends up, it goes, cuts down like, Oh, Sir Jasper, Do Not Touch Me. It goes down to Father Christmas. It's the last thing. I think it's very healthy.
there's nothing like music.
Well, it's fantastic that you three were hanging around on Top of the Pops with the Pants people, because presumably other pop stars are going, what? Who are these idiots?
We belong there, you see. We did belong there. Yeah. We really did, yeah.
No, the music is fantastic, Bill. As you know, you're a genius. And the other two aren't bad either. Let's talk about the classic moments. We've alluded to some of them, and there are things that I just remember from watching it. I remember being obsessed with squeezing ketchup bottles as a 5 or 6 year old, seeing those things and wanting to just squirt them in people's faces. The black puddings and the big hats, we've seen that. I'm a Yorkshireman, very offensive. And of course, I remember watching King Kong with my family the first time it was on, and how impressed my parents were. You know, I think it might be the reason I became a comedian, isn't it? I saw my dad being impressed by.
So it's our fault.
Yeah, I think it could be. Look, can I impress him by doing this?
Desperate he was to make his dad impressed. I don't love you, boy, unless you're funny.
do the classic moment, do they kind of haunt you? Is it an annoying thing where a catchphrase is repeated to you, or is it nice that people remember those specific moments?
We did some interviews at the top of the BT Tower for the release of these things. And one of the things they gave us as a gift was a tin of peppermints with the kitten pulling down the tower on the a picture of it on the front. So obviously the icon is being cherished by the tower itself.
It would be daft not to be very proud of it, really. You know, and it's fun. Let's face it. You know.
Yeah. it's amazing. Amazing to watch them all again. It's a real lovely thing to be able to. To see them and to know that sometimes you watch something back and you think,
also at a very reasonable price.
Yeah, it is. Everyone should buy it. And it's Network are putting together, do a lot of work in bringing together TV shows, as Go Faster Strike do, who do my DVDs. But Network have done a lot of great work in bringing back old TV shows that wouldn't get released.
They put a lot of love into it too, and digitally enhanced it, so it does look that much better.
And does that make up? I mean, I know it always annoyed me, it annoyed the fans, and I know it annoyed you that the BBC never repeated these things.
It annoys Bill.
Even at the time.
It wasn't just annoyed. I actually think we were a bit puzzled by it. After a while, we began to think, you know, is there some edict at the BBC? And then when I got dropped from Springwatch, I thought, yeah, there is.
But they didn't repeat things as much back then, did they? Because I remember, I didn't see Monty Python the first time because I was too young. And then I think they didn't repeat it again until about 1980 or something like that. So it was, they weren't, the BBC weren't keen to repeat things straight away.
No, but they never stopped repeating it. I mean, I always think of Python and Dad's Army as being on somewhere every single day.
Funny enough, that was a they showed a few Dad's Army late on a Sunday afternoon.
Yeah.
And suddenly more and more people watching them, and then they repeated them, and that got them going. So if we could be on Sunday afternoon, it might work.
I think it should. I mean, I don't know which episode it was, but there was it was one night in Cheddar, there was like an electrical storm or something that took down all TV. So nothing was written. I missed The Goodies and Blake 7. Don't know if anyone else remembers this night. They never repeated on this. You never got... So there's an episode of Blake 7 I never saw, never made sense to me after that. And there's... luckily The Goodies still made sense. But like, you know, it was such a big deal to me that I missed that episode of The Goodies. But now I will be able to find it somewhere amongst all those lot. And the move... Do you think the move to LWT was part of the problem that the BBC...
is extraordinary, because we didn't want to leave them. It's just they kept putting it off and putting it off.
Well, I'd read that because of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy used up all the budget. Yeah. Douglas Adams killed The Goodies.
Yeah,
it's the visual effects department. That was it. It's not the BBC so much.
Right.
They were doing that. So sure they couldn't do both.
So you were getting put off and put off, and yeah. so you wanted to yeah. go. And yeah. do you regret that move, or are you happy you made the move? I mean, I suppose if there was no choice, then it's...
There really wasn't any choice, and no. these two were going through divorces, and they paid us three times as much.
So. Right. Yeah.
And as it happens, I think some of the shows are some of the best we did on the LWTs, which are available.
They are indeed available.
And I think some of those are really good.
Yeah. But I think that's it. I hadn't really thought of that idea that the BBC had, which, again, they don't have anymore, those in-house departments.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
So, you know, there was a costume department in North Acton, wasn't there, that probably wasn't used in the early 90s, and then that's all gone or just sold off to someone else.
But they used to sit round this table Bill was talking about earlier when we were going through every single shot on film, and they would all sit round the table, and that, the fact that they were in-house made it so much easier.
Yeah. I remember that happening with the big flat caps and the makeup department, the costume department had got to handle those, and they said, we want big flat caps, you know, so yeah, no problem, love. And in they come, they said, with a hat about this big, we said, no, we want big flat hats. Come in with another one, no, well, how big then? This big, please. And eventually, they bless them, they came in having to make, they made about five versions, I think, before we actually got to the big one, you know. And that's lovely, because you really are working.
First of all, they said, they're size 16.
And are you glad you settled on the name The Goodies? Because it was originally, I don't know if you had many names, originally Narrow Your Mind was the working
that title. Followed on from Broaden Your Mind, that one. Right. And then Bill came up with...
I'm not going to say it.
Go on.
What?
Go on.
Super Chaps 3.
Yeah, Super Chaps 3. You see? I knew I was right.
Could have gone with it.
Came to me in the middle of the night, that one did, yeah.
Super Chaps
But the Goodies was, I think, fairly unanimous with those who had to decide, because it, which is us and a few others, you know, because it sounded like a rock group, which was, which is good, and it also, goodies as opposed to badness, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, but you never imagine, I suppose, when you're coming up with something like that, that this will still be a thing.
Anybody's going to
be in four decades' time. Because Monty Python's quite a bad... I mean, they had a lot of choices for names, didn't they? But it's quite a bad name, really. And Monty Python's Flying Circus is quite a bad name. They're lucky it's all about Monty Python.
Suffered from the goodies in a bit, because people seem to think goody-goody, goodies, you know, that sort of... little chaps running around, but so I think it in a way counted against it. Bill's right, one of the reasons was we wanted it to sound like a pop group, Monkees or whatever.
But I think without a doubt, down the years, the sort of people who like sheep who don't like the shows, the don't likers who nearly always, I don't mean to be too critical, but it seems a bit of a snobbery thing, you know, it's not clever enough.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a kids' programme, if you want to call it that. As John, we made John Cleese say that on one of the programmes. But I think I feel that got into the BBC hierarchy, to go with repeats. I might be wrong, but I sort of didn't know.
One of the funny things was somebody said, you know, John Cleese said kids' programme. Who do you think wrote that line for him? We did.
I think it was me who said it to you, Tim. But I also think there's not, you know, I was a kid when it was on, and it was really important to me. And I actually, we had the same thing, because our shows were on early. And I think actually young people, when, you know, if comedy and music mean so much to them, they actually have the best taste, really. And that's why these people are still here. The older ones are dead, but the ones...
Actually, there's a couple of them went during the show.
they may have done. I'm just delighted you've all got to the end, all three of you. That was my... Well, you know, it'd be good for the CV if one of you could just pop off now. Some hits on the podcast. Let's give everyone a big round of applause. Ladies and gentlemen... Here's The Goodies, Timbrook Taylor, Graham Garden, Bill Oddie. Come on, lads. People love you.
You can do it.
Come on, Graham.
All right.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, Richard.
Thank you.
Brilliant.
Thank you.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods
for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Thanks for listening. Go to gofasterstripe.com for all your Rich Herring download and book needs. Go to richherring.com/gigs to find out if Can I Have My Ball Back is coming near to you. And please listen to as many podcasts on this feed as you possibly can and make your family and friends and children and strangers, make them listen too. Do get consent from everyone before you make them listen, though. All right, thanks for listening. Go and listen to another one. Bye-bye.